Thanks for coming over.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We got Craig Francis. You get that right?
That's right. That's right.
The Craig Francis.
The one and only?
I'm the only one that I know. There may be more.
We're at the Western Hunt Expo. You guys have a booth, right?
We do. UltraView booth 7312.
Okay, it's in the room off the side, right? The main room?
It's in the broom closet in the back. Apparently, we need to try harder.
How many other booths are back in there?
There's probably 30 booths back there.
It's full?
Yeah, I mean, it's stacked up. It's just kind of like, it looks like you're leaving the main exhibit hall. You go past the stairwell, and then there's a back room. It's suboptimal, for sure.
Right.
But you got to earn your dues.
Spots are limited in the main hall.
Yeah.
We wouldn't even have a good spot ourselves.
We gave up we had like a big chunk right there, like up by the Mossback booth for many, many years. And then we didn't do it for a couple. And then we decided to do a booth this year, much smaller. And trying to get a spot was almost impossible. Like, it was tough.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we just lived with what we got, which is kind of back there by, Mountain Ops, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How do you want to get started? Do you want to hit promo? We always skip it.
Yeah, we should get a promo real quick.
I'm terrible at that. I always miss promo.
Especially at these things. It's always like a little bit weird to just throw a promo in there right away. But gotta get the people what they want. You know, we gotta save some money.
Mm-hmm.
Get money back in this case.
Hit us with the promo, B-Mills.
I'm just rolling right now, Trail.
Huh?
I was rolling right into it.
Oh, my bad.
So I was going to say, gotta save money. And I was like, by saving money, you can use promo code podcast. You can sign up for an insider account and you'll get 50 points back to the Going Gear Shop. And there's no better time than now to have an insider account to do research. Plus, we have predictive draw odds now. The new feature is launched.
That's right.
We're going to have more states added to predictive odds, more preference point states. Plus, you get all the other draw odds, filtering, research in the app, everything. App strategies, all the good stuff you need right now to try to find some hunts and draw some tags.
Yep. And then shout out to SIG Sauer Optics. You played with those?
The stabilizer? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have.
What do you think?
Pretty slick. So I'm a like diehard Swaro user.
Sure, yeah. Me too. I'm like Leica.
yeah. But I will say the glass was much better in the SIGs than I thought it was going to be.
Right.
And then I think in the right scenario, you would absolutely want those Zulus because you're using them, right? You like them a lot.
I love them.
In the 15s.
You should be able to hike a little bit and pull up binos and glass, or like even when you're sitting down and normally you have to tripod mount and optic, I can actually just lean back and like kick against a rock and like glass one-handed and be comfortable, which I feel like I'm comfortable then when we're glassing more. I like them. I can't go back to non-stabilized now.
This is the first full year, like the full year that I used them, and I still like to sit in glass with a tripod, but I will say unequivocally, like if you're a bow hunter and you're making, like you're calling elk or you're spotting stock muley or whatever, oddad, whatever it might be, like that approach with those things is unbeatable because they're just so steady. So
yeah.
Like when you're at 60 yards or 80 yards and you're looking for like an antler tip or a tine and the steadiness that those provide, you just like pick it out without having to like, you know, set your bow down or something. They're super stable.
Have you guys liked the main, I'm like a traditionalist in the form factor. So like the physical shape.
Ergonomics of
it. Yeah. So when I used them, I was like, this technology is rad.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait until they figure out a way to like form it.
Make it wrapped a little bit more.
Yeah. Just like it's not clunky, but I'm just not used to it.
Yeah, because it's more boxy shape on the top. So you have to get used to where the fine focus is and where the button is.
Right.
It's not like a normal binary. Just
I'll say I did get used to it.
Did you?
Yeah.
So I haven't used them enough to know.
So the first gen of those have got the battery that runs right in the middle of it, right underneath it. And after a minute, like you can kind of wrap your thumbs either side of it, kind of set it either side of that battery little bubble where it sits. And I've gotten a lot more used to it than I was initially. I was kind of like you though when I first picked them up. Yeah. I was like, oh, they just feel weird.
I mean, what a competitive advantage though. Like everybody's going to have to figure that out.
For sure. Yeah.
Like you can't not have it in your product lineup now. So kudos to SIG.
Yeah. Yeah, they're I was like you. I'm like a bit of a contrarian, you know. I'm like I'm not doing it. I'm not gonna embrace them. Like I'm gonna sit behind my Leicas forever. And once I picked them up and played with them though for a year, I'm like, these definitely have use case and it's a major advantage. I think.
I think so.
I think I'm a lot of a contrarian, not just a little bit.
But. That's why I wanted to have you on today. What hot takes do you have?
I don't know. Let's get into it.
I will say, like, I've known you for quite a while now. You're probably one of my favorite followers on Instagram.
Why is that?
This is the Instagram.
Well, thank you for the compliment, but I'm
Instagram,
curious.
The Instagram stories you do, like, kind of like, not really calling out people or like things in this world, but like doing your job, like being open-minded, like not being afraid to say what you want to say, and like giving good advice too about just anything random, life, business, work ethic, like all that stuff. And you're a talented dude.
Well, like, thank you. Cool, I appreciate the compliment and that. Yeah, I think just one of my, I have learned so much from other people that I really try to, not speak on things that I don't know about or have like a deep subject matter expertise in, but in the narrow lane of things that I do feel like I have some amount of wisdom to share, I'm like not afraid to talk about it, because I had people do that for me. I found that to be very valuable, both personally and professionally. And so I enjoy it. I do. I like to kick the hornet's nest every now and again. I'm not afraid to do that. Speak my mind, like kind of a free speech absolutist. But I like chopping it up on the internet. It's fun. It helps like get feedback on some of my ideas. I'll be the first to like publicly admit that I was wrong about something. I don't really care about like my public perception or ego is like pretty minimal. I'm open to be corrected about just about anything. But I enjoy keeping my finger on the pulse and pitching an idea out there and seeing what people come back with.
And you're a 30 Cal fan.
I'm a 30 Cal fan.
This we get along great.
I feel like you guys should hug.
I work at a bow hunting company now. I've been bow hunting for 15 years, but I grew up as a rifle hunter in South Carolina. 308 maximalist as a child. 30 Cal was definitely, I have a 30 nozzler that's like my baby. It'll probably get a little bit less use now, but I will never stop. I'm a hunter. Like any weapon, if I can be out there, I want to be out there.
Yeah.
I have a ton of friends, obviously, that are, you know, bow hunter, like, that's all that I do. Full respect. I love that. There's a part of me that wants to be that way. I'm just not. And like, I know that I'm not.
I want to be that way, and I'm not even. I love archery.
Yeah, Trochot deer with the rifle.
I shot a deer with a rifle this year. Yeah,
that's
I took my kid out. Yeah. My 12-year-old wanted to go hunting, and you know, he wasn't old enough to like actually apply and get a deer tag. And so I didn't bow hunt that hard. Went out a few days with Neville and helped him. He had a tag in the same area. Did some spotting for him, but didn't really hunt that hard. And then, I was kind of saving it to take my kid because he just wanted to go. And yeah, he talked me into a buck.
That's awesome.
I was like, do you think I should shoot that buck? And it was a good buck. It was actually a buck we had some history with. Neville had two different stocks on that buck, and I don't know how he evaded him. But he was like, I think you should shoot that deer. And I was like, hell yeah, I'm here. With my kid, let's have an experience, you know?
That's awesome.
So even me, I'll pick up a rifle every, I put probably 5 or 10 rounds down range a year, maybe. Hey,
as long as your zero is good, send it.
Yeah, that's it. I was looking through your Instagram. You brought up his Instagram page.
I told you, you gotta do a deep dive. You gotta check it all out.
I do deep dive. I follow you. I'm just not a social guy myself. I don't post much, but sure. I was looking at your bio. So you have Freedom Maximalist in your bio.
Yeah.
What does that mean to you?
I believe in the old ideals that this country was built on. Without going too deep into this subject, I work with the military in a certain capacity. I care about what those guys do and what they do for us as American citizens. I just love the idea that is America and the freedoms that we have in this country. I've traveled around the world a decent amount. My mom runs an orphanage in a third world country.
Really?
I've been, in Honduras.
Dang. Really?
And so I've been exposed to other countries, other cultures. I think there's beauty to be found everywhere, but I love what we have here. I think that it is something to be admired and continually fought for.
Gotcha.
And so when I say freedom maximalist, it's a little bit of like a spark of incendiary comment to like bring about this question.
Yeah.
Because it's just something I like to talk about.
Yeah. I was just curious as to whether it was, you know, more related to patriotism and the country and, you know, the place that we're fortunate enough to live in and grow up in, or if it was more leaning towards, you know, the freedom of, you know, photography and the outdoors. And those probably go hand in hand.
Yeah. I mean, freedom just as an idea holistically is something that I'm very interested in. My personality bend is like, I like to explore and tinker with kind of outside the sandbox and see what's out there. Being told what to do doesn't, I don't do well with that. There's learnings for me in there. I have faced some scenarios professionally, especially where it's like, I am not as good as I thought I was and I need to like check myself. Mm-hmm. But the ability to try and experiment and taste different creative endeavors, or even just like in my own personal life development, is like, I want the freedom to explore and come to an understanding of, why do I think what I think? Why do I believe what I believe? And not just have something presented to me and take it at face value. I need to like check it for myself.
You sound a lot like me. That's how I look at things too. Mm. It's like constant analysis of like what I'm reading is true or not. And how do I personally feel about it and assess it?
Yep.
Huh. So you traveled a lot as a kid?
Yeah, I did. I've been to Africa, been down in Central America quite a bit.
Gotcha.
Yeah, just, and then around the States a ton, but.
You grew up in South Carolina?
South Carolina, originally.
What was that like?
I mean, it's all I ever knew.
Did you ever hunt gators?
I didn't, but I had gators eat ducks that we would shoot. That was pretty common. Yeah, huh. There's like some spots that we hunted where you don't send a dog.
Yeah. Wow. I guess I never thought of that, but that's a thing.
I sold a pair of boots one time. I had a pair of Kinetrek boots that just didn't fit my foot, and ended up selling them online to a guy. He bought them from South Carolina, and we just started chit-chatting, and it's talking Western hunting. He wanted to come west, and he just started talking to me about hog hunting and gators.
Yeah.
And started sending me a bunch of photos of gators that those guys were shooting, and I started getting points. So I've got some points for gators in South Carolina.
Really?
Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah, so built those up. I never actually followed through. We never we just didn't connect the dots over time. But yeah, I remember this guy just sending me pictures of giant gators. And at the time, I was like, I didn't know South Carolina had gators.
That's kind of a sleeper hunt in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely a thing. I have not done it, but I have friends that have done it. It's one of the hunts that like doesn't really interest me personally, but I think that it's cool.
Yeah. What about it doesn't interest you? I'm curious.
So this is a like on the fly developing idea. I have like a list of species where I'm just like, I don't know. They're kind of cool to look at. I don't know if I want to kill one. Gators are on
one
that
of them?
List. Yeah.
What else?
people are going to be like, that dude's nuts. Presently, like most sheep species are also on that list.
Uh-huh.
I've spent a lot of time photographing sheep and around sheep. And it's just, it's like such a majestic and regal animal to me that like, I think that I get more enjoyment out of just like interacting with them and looking at them than harvesting one.
I'm
prone to like change my opinion on that.
Sure.
And like, if someone was like,
if you drew a tag,
bighorn sheep tag, do you want it? I'd be like, absolutely. I have now changed my mind.
Yeah.
But just like on premise, I feel that way. I feel the same way about brown bears and grizzly bears. Mm-hmm. It's like not a thing that I'm super interested in taking. I've spent a lot of time in Alaska around bears, and it's just like, dude, that's a freaking cool animal.
Yeah.
And when I've like spent time in Kodiak, I've been to Kodiak a lot actually, and spent a lot of time around bears. And it's just like, I don't know. I just don't feel that itch mm-hmm. to like punch the trigger on one. And there's like a developing idea of what's on that list, what comes and goes off of that list. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just like a thing that I think about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Huh. I've only ever killed one mountain lion. I've told this before, but I drew a tag and then went out and did a bunch of hiking and scouting. And then I had a buddy that ran dogs, and he had mules, and he hunted them for mules. Right. And I had mm-hmm. a lot of respect for this guy. I wanted to hunt with him, and I wanted to hunt with dogs and mules and do the whole thing. And I did it one time, and I had kind of the same experience afterwards. I was just like, I don't think that that's for me.
Mm-hmm.
That was probably 10, 11 years ago at this point. But more recently, I don't know. I've been getting kind of the itch, and it's not necessarily the it's the experience as a whole that kind of like draws me in. It was, and I think back on that experience, and probably what sparked kind of a resurgence in me was I ran into this guy's nephew. He guides deer hunts and stuff, and still runs dogs. And I ran into him on the mountain this year with my kid when I was hunting deer, and just started talking to him, and it was just like sucked me back in. And it's like their way of life that I find enchanting and interesting. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's been like, oh, I kind of want to do that again.
You know? It's just like being around like houndsmen specifically. Yeah. So in South Carolina, I grew up like hunting deer with dogs. That was like a very common.
Really?
Yeah. It was like my grandfather was a member of a hunt club that was mostly a dog club. He didn't participate in that himself. He would just like tower hunt and shoot a rifle. But I grew up hunting whitetails with dogs. I haven't done that in a long time. That's obviously a like medium incendiary topic, pending where you come from, if you're not exposed to that. In South Carolina, deer population is just like uncontrollable. And so method of take running dogs is obviously like a very effective
method
of hunting.
I don't know much about it.
So you would take a block of timber.
Okay.
And you put dogmen and hounds out on, say it's a square, on two sides, and then your opposite two sides, you place hunters with shotguns, and then you
push.
Yeah.
Mm. Gotcha. Yeah.
It's extremely effective.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. And it's pretty wild and crazy too.
It is. I got shot when I was 12. Yeah.
With a shotgun?
Yeah.
A slug?
Buckshot.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The nature of people that get involved in that kind of hunting can be a little bit, it's a very redneck behavior. Let's just call it what
okay.
it is.
Yeah.
You like space people. You sit on a 5-gallon bucket, or at least that's what we did when I was a kid. And you space out like several hundred yards. And there's kind of like, obviously, gentleman's agreement of firearm etiquette when you're involved in such a thing. But that particular hunt, I was on like a dirt road was one side of the square, and I was sitting on it, and there was a guy. You're supposed to be spaced out 300 or 400 yards. And so like if the deer runs immediately in the middle between the both of you, it's kind of like it's too far for a shotgun. You're not going to do it. This guy sat, I don't know, maybe 120 yards to my left, like not far enough. And there was a clear cut old timber property, and just a pile of does were like coming screaming through, like closer. They were probably 40 yards from him, which would have made him 80 or so yards from me. And I see him like bring his gun up and start swinging. And even as I was 12, even as a kid, I saw it happening, and I was like, oh no. Because you need to wait until the line is clear. Cause it's like a straight road. And he cut one loose, like straight down the road. And I remember getting my arm up like this, and I got three
in your side?
Yeah, they skipped off the road.
Wow.
And they like went through my jacket and like kind of stopped in my like sweatshirt or whatever. Didn't break skin. No, but that guy didn't have a good day after that. My grandfather wore him out.
How do you feel about the ethics of hunting with dogs for deer?
I think it is if it is cultural commonplace.
Sure.
Which it certainly is in South Carolina. The difference between like what's legal and what's ethical and what's your personal ethic, like there's a lot of leeway in that, right? So I fault no one who does something to the letter of the law. If it's legal, have at it.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not I decide to personally participate is a different conversation. Mm-hmm. I'm not really interested in that now, but I don't look down upon people that do. I don't think that I'm better than or whatever. You know, that is it. If the Department of Natural Resources or Fish and Game or whatever in that state says like this is kosher, go for it.
Yeah, that's how I feel. I mean, it's not all that different from what I did as a kid. It was just, you know, 12-year-old kids that were beating bush instead of dogs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we used to do deer drives all the time in Wisconsin.
We did the same thing. A bunch of people would line out, push timber patches and push muleys. You put a shooter on a knob, and I mean, we did the same thing.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Nobody hunts like that anymore. It's kind of a lost.
It's kind of a lost thing, yeah.
Yeah, at least I haven't seen everybody post up in glasses, you know.
So you're saying we should bring it back and go do some...
We could do a deer drive.
Some deer drives.
We could make Omar
You mean Neville Omar? And
Omar be the brush beater.
Try to do it with bows, too.
Yeah.
I'd be into that.
You'd be the brush beater. Yeah, you'd be the hiker. You just run grids.
Yeah, when I was growing up, I was the youngest, so I always had to run through all the brush.
Me too.
And push them all out to the older guys.
You're the youngest. You're the brush beater, man. Yeah, that's what I did as a kid. Every deer hunt, we'd push timber patches.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you grew up in South. Where? How did you get involved in? So you hunted as a kid, yep. obviously, from yep. the time you were 12.
Earlier than that, I grew up in a hunting family. My grandfather, my papa, like taught me most of what I know, or at least set me on the path to hunting. They lived on the Lake Murray in South Carolina. The biggest like single anecdote that I can tell you about his life is they had four chest freezers in the carport,
mm-hmm.
and they were divided by animal. Two of them were for fish, one was for deer, and one was for small game and everything else.
Really?
And so we'd hunt squirrels and coons and the whole nine yards, and like anything that we shot, we ate. And it was like I didn't know any different.
Eating raccoon?
Mm-hmm.
That was a. There's a lot of buzz right now going on about people eating raccoon.
I don't know, right? My grandma would do like a same as like squirrels, like a Perlo. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that. Yeah, it's gumbo is not the right word. It's like a slow cooker, like rice kind of situation.
Gotcha.
It'd be similar to how you could cook rabbit. It's very good. I liked it.
Yeah, I've never eaten a raccoon.
I don't know that I'd be looking to eat raccoon.
I've had muskrat, beaver. Obviously squirrel, rabbit, but never coon.
I just saw a video the other day on Instagram, a couple of guys with a raccoon, and they were like, yeah, you got to leave the foot on so you know it's coon, and make sure that you cook that thing up. And they had a whole rundown on how they were cooking and eating it.
Huh, that's
funny. A bit of a resurgence, I think, within the last 2 months or something. Seems like I've been seeing more of it.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know.
You're really tapped in, aren't you?
Yeah, it's always interesting to explore.
What's on Terrell's discovery feed?
It's always interesting to explore what's on people's discovery feeds, right?
Yeah.
What pops up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, weird. I'd love to know the ins and outs of how that all works. It's almost
I'm not a great resource for that. I've just done it, but it's been a long time.
Yeah. When did you move, like, west? When did you start getting into western hunts?
Yeah, so my same grandfather that I just mentioned, he would go... he would go out to Wyoming and hunt mule deer a lot when I was a boy.
Really?
Mule deer and antelope. Yeah. And so I some of my early childhood memories that are good are like sitting in the living room floor, like playing like Lincoln Logs and building stuff in the floor. And then there's like mule deer and antelope mounts on the wall. And he would tell me like, when you're old enough, like I'll take you out there. And so I had a fascination with the West, like from a very early age. And then I played soccer all the way through college. And
oh, did you?
Yeah, yeah.
Where at?
I played at Spartanburg Methodist College, and then which is a 2-year school, and then got a scholarship to continue at Wofford College, which is a 1AA school in South Carolina.
You still follow soccer?
I don't. I shattered my leg, and I was like game over. Like a really bad injury.
Do you follow like Premier League or MLS?
I used to a lot more than I do now.
Gotcha.
But I started playing travel, like ODP soccer, in middle school and high school. And I kind of like stopped hunting for 5 or 6 years. Cause I was like, I was one of the several teams that I was on I was never not in season. And so I kind of like, you know, typical kid, like start chasing girls and playing soccer and didn't really hunt that much. And my grandfather, he passed away, when I was a sophomore in school before I ever went hunting with him. And I really regretted that. I remember being at his funeral and like telling myself that I would move out west and like learn how to hunt the West, like because of him. And so I moved my first job out west, I guess, was I moved to Seattle. I worked for Filson for 2 years. And then I would pop over to Idaho. My first elk hunt was 2018. In Idaho. And so I really just like am only into the Western game, I guess, for 6 years, seven years now. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Man, it's interesting, isn't there like the little seeds that are set in your life to lead you down a path?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm fascinated with it, like eat up with it. After Seattle, I moved to Bozeman. I worked at Sitka for 5 years and I just like dedicated everything I could to Montana and learned a lot, had some good friends teach me as much as I could glean from their learning. Sam Averett's photographer. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I credit him with most of what I know about
such a great guy.
Western hunting. Yeah, he's a beauty. But yeah, dude, I love it. I love it. And now just moving back to Georgia to work at UltraView, it's bittersweet to leave Montana. Mm-hmm. This career opportunity for me was a good one that I wanted to take, but absolutely, like, I intend to be in the West as much as possible. Mm-hmm. I'm getting pretty dangerous with points in like a lot of states for deer and elk. So pending, I probably should start digging into some of the new predictive draw stuff that you got. I haven't looked at it yet. But I'm like at least 6, if not 8 points in a lot of states deer and elk. Cause I just put in for points. So I was like, I live in Montana. I'm dedicating everything to Montana. I'm not
opportunity
traveling.
Always exists.
Yeah. I was like, I'm just going to stack points because I knew I wouldn't live in Montana for forever. And then that was always the plan. It's like one day I will be glad that I have 5 to 10 years worth of like just stashed points.
Set yourself up,
start going in on. And so I'm getting pretty dangerous in Colorado, Wyoming, Arizona, Nevada.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're getting there.
Yeah, I'm looking forward.
You can start to cash one of those out a year or two a year and just start skipping around and then start the process again of rebuilding.
Yep, that's it.
Yeah. How'd you get into photography? Did your college, did you go to college for?
No. So after I broke my leg in college, I had a really rough time after. I was like, being an athlete was my identity.
Yeah.
I had no other plan.
I got a kid that's going through this right now.
Yeah. Like, I wanted to join the military straight out of high school. I graduated in 05. It's like when Iraq was a huge deal. We're probably all about the same age. Mm-hmm. But the recruiter was a member of my church, and through a long set of circumstances, he was encouraged to tell me to just like go to school, get your degree, you can come back and join the Marine Corps after college. When I broke my leg, I've got a 16-inch titanium rod in my leg, which made me medically ineligible for service. So it was like my entire life plan was up in smoke, and I was no longer an athlete, like in an instant. I took that really hard.
Yeah.
I had no like wind in my sails for anything. That was 07. It's funny, man. I've been on a couple of podcasts recently. This topic has had occasion to come up every time. I'm trying to decide what that means. I'm becoming more okay like talking about parts of my life that historically I haven't been. Mm-hmm. But in 07 was when like the like opiates and Oxycontin was like being prescribed really heavily. After my surgery, I got septic. I almost died. I had a lot of nerve damage. I got prescribed Oxycontin. And I went down that rabbit hole, like not of my own choosing, for a while. And I saw how devastating that can be personally. And I had just a really bad time. Was just like really sick with addiction to opiates, trying to get clean, not able to like tell my brain that I won't die if I don't have this medication. And eventually did get clean, but I knew I had to like radically change my environment or I was not gonna make it. And so I found at that time Knowles National Outdoor Leadership School. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that.
Mm-hmm. No.
It's a worldwide program. It's headquartered in Lander, Wyoming. They do like wilderness education programs.
Lander,
and,
huh?
Yeah. So I haven't like dug into them in recent years. The assumption is that what I'm about to say is mostly still true. But it's like you pay to go learn how to do outdoor stuff.
Yeah.
They do as short as like 10-day trips up to like year-long trips. And at the time, so this is spring of 08, they would run semester programs where you could get college credit. And so I did a semester in the Southwest campus, which was headquartered in Tucson, Arizona. And I got 15 hours of college credit for basically going to live in the wilderness for 3 months. And it's like geology stuff and like risk management and some like natural science courses and stuff like that. But we did a 3-week backpacking section in King of Arizona, Kofa Wilderness, like near the California border.
Yep.
Did a caving thing in Carlsbad, New Mexico, did 130 mile canoe trip on the Rio through Big Bend National Park.
That's awesome. Dang.
And then did you kind of graduate the course with a it's called ISGT Independent Student Group. I don't know what the last word is. You basically, four of you, plan a trip. They give you a drop-off and a pickup point that's like 100 miles.
Mm-hmm.
And you do a rad plan, like route and design. And then you make your tertiary, like if shit gets sideways, this is where to come look for us. And you basically plan out a wilderness excursion of a legitimate distance. And you have like 9 or 10 days to make it. And that's like your final exam, like everything that you've learned from land nav to water collection and like group dynamics and all the things. They drop you off and they tell you good luck and we'll see you in 9 or 10 days at your proposed pickup point. And that was in the Gila in northern New Mexico.
Gotcha.
And so on that trip, I took a camera because it seemed like that's something that you should do.
Document some memories.
And that's where the photography thing really started for me. I love like documenting people in wild places. Mm-hmm. And that's where the photo thing started. And that's what really like, I didn't know it for probably 5 more years, but that was the genesis of my career and how I got involved in the outdoors and everything else that started happening. Really, I would say I started working freelance in the outdoor space in like 2012.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What do you like most about the creative side of photography, videography, all that stuff? That like you're still doing it, and what
yeah,
makes you?
I don't do it as much anymore. Obviously, like as I've progressed in my career, I still do it. Like if I can be additive to, you know, content capture campaign thing, I will still pick up a camera and run it. I did it so much, so fast, so heavy for like a stretch of years that I kind of came to resent it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I put the camera down, like really when I went to go work for Filson, I was like, I'm kind of out on this for now. But having come back to it during my tenure at Sitka, I shot a lot of stuff for us. I like don't fake the funk, like do the raw thing, like mm-hmm. don't over direct. And it's just like, it's from my grandfather. I grew up sitting on the floor, flipping through physical photo albums, just the memory capture of the nature of how our human brain works. Like you will forget things.
Yep.
And a photograph, especially a printed photograph, will remind you of things that you might otherwise forget. And so I just became really romantic about that idea. And man, I dove into it like full force and kind of made that how I made money. And then I got on the agency side and started doing a lot of like content direction and campaign work for brands across all kind of industries. What saltwater fishing space, I did a ton of work with that. Apparel brands, and then got into the hunt space. My first like proper hunt photograph that I ever sold was to Matthews Archery.
Uh-huh.
And then that, the relationship, Brad Christian, who is now the creative director at Sitka Studio, he's a dear, dear friend of mine. He'll actually be a groomsman at my wedding in a couple months.
Congratulations.
Yep.
Happy Valentine's.
Thank you. Valentine's Day. Love you, Maddie. I credit him with like, I mean, he changed my life, like buying that photograph when he was at Matthews. And then he's the one that brought me to Sitka. And
what was the image?
It was a GoPro image. I mounted the GoPro to my stabilizer and I was just outside like shooting in the rain.
Hmm.
And there's just like, I'm in a rain jacket. It's like shit weather. And there's like water on the GoPro. It's a GoPro Hero 2. Ooh. For camera nerds out there. It's back in the
yourself.
Day. And he was like, he just liked the dedication of like practicing outside in the rain.
Yeah.
He was like, that's a cool image. I haven't seen that. I want to get it. And I think he bought it for like $200, and this was 2012 or 13. And I was like, I can make $200 for a photograph.
Yeah.
My brain just exploded.
Huh.
And that was like that single interaction, actually DM'd him on Twitter. And that's like where we connected, and it was just like, I was working in the coffee industry at a time. I was a quality control roaster for a Brazilian importing company, just working like odd jobs and photographing my friends hunting on the weekends. I was like, this is real. Like, this can be a thing. Mm-hmm. And I remember he and I, we laugh about this, but I like vivid memory of this, being on the phone with him. Maybe 2 months, he bought a couple more photos for me, like that season. And I remember saying to him, dude, if I could figure out a way to make 30 grand with a camera, my life would be complete. Made. Yeah. And it was just like such a foreign, like I didn't know anything about how to sell creative work at the time, how to network appropriately, and I'm in the South. Mm-hmm. So like this is back in the day when it was like C-Crack Creative was running real hard, mm-hmm. like early Sitka stuff. I ended up working for Jeff Simpson at 39 North in Kansas City for a while, which was really great for me. Learned a lot. But that was all prior to that. I was just like watching. I was on Instagram like super early, like 2011 when it was first popping off, and watching stuff happening out West where like in the infancy of like outdoor creative work on the internet, not mm-hmm. in print, like when that was happening, I was like, that's it. Mm-hmm. Like, how do I figure this out from over here? And I guess in some ways, like I figured it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What makes a good photographer? Like what is the drive? Cause here's the thing. Like I hunt a lot. I spend a decent amount of time outdoors, but I lack this like innate ability and desire, I guess. I don't know. I often
with a camera.
Yeah. Mm. So I often wonder, because Brady's a great photographer, we have several good photographers, and I think Neville does a really good job at like capturing images, and he takes the time and the effort to do it. But I've often wondered, like, what is it that I seem to be lacking in that regard? Because I can appreciate a great image, and I love good photography. I really love it. And my dad's a great photographer. What is it in you, do you think? Like, what is that? Is it a creative? I mean,
yeah.
I don't even know if I'm asking a tangible question here, but.
Well, you're pulling at a thread that has a theme that I talk about a lot. I think that there is a innate, like in your physical, like people are more right-brained or left-brained, mm-hmm. like creativity exists on a specific side, and like how you, more people's personalities are prone to tapping into creative endeavors or like concrete data endeavors, right? Like that's a thing. Mm-hmm. And so some of it I think is innate, and there is the biggest kind of variable that I like to identify in creative people is, do you have an innate curiosity? Mm-hmm. And some people have it, some people don't. And then developing the like technical acumen to become a good photographer, and good in every creative endeavor is 100% subjective.
Sure.
I think it's like you just have to like the journey of trying to make something that you enjoy because you enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And that can be written words, photography, painting, anything. It's just like, I have a curiosity within this subject. How I want to express or bring forth that curiosity is the creative medium of choice. Mm-hmm. For me, it was with a camera. And then you just need to have like a good reason. For me, it was like my grandfather flipping through photo albums. Sure. It's like, that was the reason.
Stuck with you.
Yeah. It's, there is a creative talent that I think can be cultivated, but there's an element of it that's born.
Yeah. Like
you have to have it. Not everybody has it.
Yeah.
If you have it, you can work on it, be disciplined, just like anything else, like put the time in, and you can improve that talent. But there's a barrier to entry that's like, I have something here. And I think that's true for any number of character traits in people, like sure. whether it's a creative expression or not, is like leaning into your own interests is a huge unlock. Mm-hmm. And this is like part of like what we were talking about earlier, the freedom side is like, I want to be free to chase the things that I decide I want to chase. The world does not really, it's more so now, but the world doesn't really reward that until you're willing to like be a little bit more contrarian and press against the edges of whatever system and box of thinking that you've mm-hmm. been raised in, to say like, I'm willing to risk an untraditional approach mm-hmm. to try something new. And whether it's like you grew up in a family that's like, go to school, get a job, take the safe route, like that's where I came from.
Yep.
It's like, I just really came to disagree with that train of thought.
Mm-hmm.
And creativity was my avenue to hit the eject button on yeah. on that kind of like life framework.
Yeah, kind of create your own.
Yep. Yep.
I've often wondered, I would love if it were ever feasible, maybe Elon can make this work, huh? With the neuron link or whatever it's called, just to like climb in somebody's brain, like yours, like Brady's, and just see. I'm always intrigued and interested. So like I see an image and I can appreciate the image, and there's definitely images that like I gravitate towards, you know. I'm like, this like talks to me. I would love to be inside someone's brain to how do they see the world different than the way I see the world? Like when you're out assessing a landscape, whether you're on a job or you're on a hunt or whatever it might be, like I would love to crawl in one of y'all's brains just to be able to assess like, how do you see the world differently than I see it? I think that would be so fascinating, because people, that's the thing about people, right? Everybody's perception is different. And I mean, we were talking yesterday, I think I was talking to Kenneth over at Kafaru, and we were just talking about deer and, you know, how they grow and develop in antler configurations, right? Because I love antlers, and I'm just obsessed with like the differences and how they, you know, different configurations and how they grow, and like everyone's unique, you know? And we were talking about age and health and nutrition and how that helps an animal versus hurts. And he's like, well, yeah, I mean, just look out across the crowd, you know. And you look out across the crowd, you walk in today, you're like, what, 6'5", 6'6", maybe?
Yeah.
I mean, everybody's built different, right? It's so, everybody's so different, and the way that we see things is so different. Mm-hmm. I would love to crawl in one of y'all's brains just to see like, how do you guys see the world different than me? Because I see a shot and I'm like, man, that's an incredible shot. It really like captures something that I've observed and I've appreciated in the field, but I wouldn't think to capture it in the way that y'all do.
Yeah. Yeah, see what you mean.
Which I think is really interesting.
Yeah. It's a gift and a curse, man. I'll tell you.
Yeah.
Like seeing the world in a creative eye can often be quite critical.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to, at least for me, learn how to keep that in like a healthy balance. Of like I walk around looking at how things could be improved or how they could be more aesthetically pleasing to the eye,
mm-hmm.
and how like now having developed in my career to be more of like on the brand side and like leading narrative and driving consumer consciousness, I'm like mm-hmm. kind of upstream of wanting to make people feel a thing to champion an idea or sell a product or push a narrative that drives towards a certain result. It's cool. I also can come to hate it, because it's like I really struggle to be present,
mm-hmm.
because I'm always looking at something and trying to take it somewhere else.
Assess it.
Yeah.
For what can I? Yeah.
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 It's an interesting balance.
Yeah, that is interesting. I think I'm probably a little older than you, so I'm 45, right? And so I remember, you know, growing up much more old school, when like the only pictures you really saw were maybe like on a cork board at a local, you know, mercantile or something, and you would see like a harvest photo of a big buck somebody or killed. And I grew up across the street from this state park, and it was over the counter deer hunting in Utah at the time, and we'd get all these people that would flood the park, you know, every October. They'd come in and they would deer hunt. And I would ride my bike around the big loop, you know, through all the campsites. And my dad was the park manager, and he would build these big A-frames, you know, people would hang their deer from. And I remember riding around and like looking at all those. And, you know, guys would have Polaroids and stuff of like their previous adventures. And then I've like seen this progression, you know, like the invention of social media and content. And then I really think like when I look over my lifetime, I think like the ability of people to capture the essence of what hunting is to them has really like progressed, like this like the expo, right? Mm-hmm. You have all this product, all these different apps and tools and things to like help people experience that. I like, if I were to put it into a box, I think photography and videography has been like the driving force.
Mm-hmm. It's been around forever. Yeah,
it has been, but really only now in a way, like probably last 10 years, I guess 15 maybe. is a means to like drive emotion.
Yeah, in a bigger way than it was before.
Yeah.
Are you trying to capture like a, when you see something, are you taking an image because you think it's cool, or are you looking at it something and thinking, what is the emotion that I'm feeling and what can I project? Do you approach it that way?
Yeah, it's both. It could be both. Obviously, I think there's a distinction between photography as a commercial endeavor and photography as art.
Okay. Like
sometimes it's a Venn diagram. Ideally, you try to get them to overlap as much as possible. Sometimes that's just not the case. For me, the photos that I love are photos that tap into an experience that I want to convey to somebody else. And so like on my Instagram, one of my favorite photos I've ever taken is we took the doors off of a De Havilland Beaver in Kodiak. And I'm like leaning out the door and there's another plane, you know, 100 feet below us and kind of back. And it's like coming over this lagoon while we were flying out to go fishing. And it's like that photo to me is so... like technically the like framing and composition, it's like maybe the most perfect photo I've ever taken, which is a little bit of just serendipity. And like, I'm on the radio telling the pilot, like, hey, can you pick up 50 feet or whatever? I'm trying to like construct the idea, but it's only going to happen once. But that photo is like it puts a spirit of adventure into the viewer. That's like, if you are a kid from South Carolina that has never been in a float plane in Alaska, you can look at that photo and be like, that looks sick. Like,
yeah, I want to be there.
That's something that I want to experience that I don't know what that feels like. And you can look at that photo and just get a hint of what that might feel like. Every great photo, I think, has a component somewhere like that, that gives the viewer a sense of the place and then taps into an emotional connection, whether that is, like a rawness of, you know, you're on day 10 of a hunt and you've hit your moment of accomplishment or your moment of failure, like you're going home, tag soup, you're not making it, and you're just like sitting there kind of dejected, like that's real. I'm after, the photos that I love are always real, like not contrived, not set up. I'm not directing the talent. I'm not telling you how to sit, where to hold your face, turn into like none of that. I just want to know like what is actually happening right now and how can I, with the tool in my hand, convey that to a viewer tomorrow or 100 years in the future and click the button and do a little bit of post-process magic to just like zhuzh it up just a little bit. And then have people feel something.
Yeah.
That's all that I'm after, is like eliciting an emotion.
Mm-hmm. That's a good way to put it. Want someone to feel it.
I love looking back. I mean, I've been fortunate to do a lot of hunting, and then I've had the ability to have like really talented cameramen and photographers and videographers with me. That's one of my favorite things, is to go back and look at what they captured. It's like looking at it third person. You know, I was experiencing it, but I'm looking at this image that they captured on a hunt. And it's the emotion that goes back to it. And I've got a few that I can think. I've got one, like a bull I killed in Utah. Kayum took the photo, and it's just like my hand like covered in blood. And, you know, I'm like moving the antler, right? But it's just like my hand. And for me, that it's pretty simple, but it's just, you know, a bloody hand. It's that crusty, bloody hand that you get when you clean an animal. But for me, like, I see that image, and it just like takes me back through all the grind, like all the suck, everything that sucked, and then just like the pure elation that I felt when that thing worked out, you know, on the bull that I wanted, and you know, it was perfect. And yeah, photography is incredible. I think it's awesome.
Yeah,
it's fun. What kind of adventure? I wanted to talk to you about just like adventure hunts. You've been all over everywhere.
I've done some stuff. I have a ton of stuff that I'd still like to do.
Let's start there then. What is it still on the bucket list?
Oh, still on the bucket list. Yukon moose is at the top with a bow. Barren ground caribou.
Have you done? You not done that yet?
No, gotcha. I haven't done either of those.
That was one for me. I did a hunt with Neville. We filmed it, and man, that was like one of those ones when I was a little kid, like the tundra. Oh, yeah.
It seems like such a classic
place.
Those
herds of caribou and like that classic image of a, you know, a big bull dripping velvet, bloody antlers, you know, mm-hmm. hanging velvet. Mm-hmm. I have some video on the last day that I was there of this big bull, like 300 yards from camp. I took to the spotting scope. He just turns and walks off. He's got another bull with him, but man, just iconic.
Yeah.
Like when I think back to being a little kid, that was, yeah, everything.
Yeah.
I hope you get to do that one.
Man, I mean, I'll figure it out. At some point, yeah. Anything that I can go like for a long time, like most of what I'm after, the reason that I most love hunting is just the solitude mm-hmm. of it. And so, you know, a couple of years ago, I did 24 straight days in Iowa on a whitetail tag. And I was just like so much time in a stand. I wasn't by myself the entire time, but just like being alone with your thoughts and being able to be, you know, on a mission, trying to accomplish something, but having unstructured time where you're disconnected from a screen.
Freedom.
Yep, 100%. Yep. And it's like any hunt that offers that, I'm into it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I'm that hunt in Iowa, actually, it's like I grew up whitetail hunting. That was, I hunted Kentucky and Ohio and Illinois before, like the Midwest. Like when you bang horns together and deer actually do hit right, like that's freaking cool. Because yeah. they might do that in South Carolina for like 3 days.
Hmm.
But I love whitetail hunting. But any like backcountry adventure stuff, mule deer, elk, like I'm just still just eat up enamored with that. I had a really great elk hunt this past season.
Killed a great bull.
Killed a hell of a bull.
I did. It wasn't the bull that I intended to kill, but really? I did.
Do tell. Maybe we talk after, huh?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can dress it up a little bit while being purposefully vague. I was already in talks with UltraView. I was feeling good about the trajectory that we were on. I'd left Sitka. I was pretty sure that there's a better than 50% chance that I wasn't going to be in Montana after this past fall of 24. And I had 7 points in Montana because I've been hunting general tags, yep. stashing points. And I was like, I'm going to put in for this unit on a rifle tag that I think I had like a 17% draw chance. I hit it. It was a good unit. And I started going up there. Did my first scouting trip in May. And I put in for the rifle tag with the intention of like, I can hunt the entire season on the rifle tag. So it's like, I'm going to hunt. It's a unit where like serious bulls are. My intention was like, if I can get on a 350 or better bull with my bow, I will do that. If I can't, then I'll wait till the rifle season and then my odds will be pretty good, to kill like something serious. And that wasn't a pursuit of like a number.
Mm-hmm.
That's the bull that I killed this past fall is only my second elk. Like mm-hmm. I do not profess to be a great elk hunter. It's like trial and error. Like mm-hmm, I've worked really hard and I've eaten a lot of tags. But I went up there in May. I started kicking around. It's a lot of private in that unit. I started door knocking and talking to ranchers. I went back in June. I went back in July. The third time I talked to this guy, he's like, you seem like a nice guy. Like you can... I asked him, can I walk across your piece to get to some public that I wouldn't otherwise be able to get to scout back in there? He said yes. Talked to him on the way out. He was like, you seem, you know, really respectful. I've enjoyed our conversations. You can hunt my property, which ended up just being an incredible experience.
That's pretty cool.
It would not, like, I didn't have to, physically, I did not have to work that hard. There were elk everywhere. Mm-hmm. I didn't really need to move. It was much more like cerebral and chess, like three-dimensional chess.
Yeah.
I was hunting transitions from bedding to feed at a river crossing. That's about as descriptive as I'm willing to be on this podcast.
Yeah.
there was the herd bull was a 6x7 that I had him at like a 50s bull. I was like, with a mm-hmm. bow, this is the target. Yeah. Like, this is what's going on. I went in on September 3rd, season opened on the 7th, and I saw him twice a day, every day with cows. They were bugling from night one, satellite bulls everywhere. and it was, I was hunting these like transition points along the river, and it was kind of like, you're making your best guess on the wind of like what river crossing are they going to take. If they, you, if you could stash into one and they take the one that you're at, you're absolutely going to have an opportunity. If they take a different one, you just sit there and watch them 250 yards away.
Yeah.
And then you try again.
Try to figure it out.
Try again at night and then the next morning. Mm-hmm. And so I did that for several days. I ended up killing the bull that I killed the morning of the 10th. So day four of the season. I was on the river, and there's kind of like a big riverbank and a flat that they would come across from feed coming back to walk up the mountain to bed. And they were just like, I can't see them from where I'm sitting. Mm-hmm. I hear them coming.
Oh,
and
man. Then
bull just like rips a bugle and it's like, okay, he's 800 yards away. At this point, I'm like, there's this crossing or another one. Like, I've got a 50% chance.
Make
now.
A decision.
And then like 2 minutes later, I like dive into this little spot, bugles again, like shit hot close. I'm like, this is about to happen. The 6x7 that I was hunting had like really big fours. And so three cows just come pouring over the riverbank and absolutely jet across the river. The lead cow actually like belly flopped off the bank, like just dove off.
Swan dive.
Yep. And so he was pressing them really hard. And it, the way the riverbank lined out, I just saw the tips of his antlers like coming over, and I saw big fours.
How far?
The far bank was 61.
Gotcha.
And so I was dialed for, I was shooting a 3-pin mm-hmm. slider at yeah. the time. Far bottom pin was dialed to 61. And he came screaming over the, like on the trot, like just bounded down the riverbank, and he was halfway. The river was 30 yards wide, so the near bank was just under 30. He was like halfway across the river before I knew like what was happening. Yeah. And I had just seen the fours, and I like didn't look at him again. I'm like grabbing my release, like I'm like, he's gonna be way closer than I thought, because I'd filmed him like this stop and drink in the river. So I'm like, I'm going to shoot him standing
sure.
in the water. Like, this is going to be awesome. Mm-hmm. Dude, he was screaming across the river. And so I just grabbed the slider and just ripped it to the top and then stood up out of the bush, came to full draw and just like yelled at him because he was already out of the water chasing cow. Hey!
Like, really?
No, it was like, I had the call in my mouth. I just jammed it to the side and yelled.
Yes. Are you at full draw?
Like coming, like standing, coming like he's going to blow past me and I'm going to, it's like, won't happen.
Right.
Like from the riverbank until I shot might've been like 4 or 5 seconds. Like he's on a hop.
Huh. Yeah.
And so I just like, stood up, hey, full draw. And it's like the worst executed archery shot of all time. Just like top pin, long mat, just
yeah.
17 yards.
Oh, wow. So close.
Yeah, double long, tipped over in 50 yards.
Was he in the river when you shot him?
No, he was already through the river.
Running around on the bank?
In the bank, like chasing cows.
Dang.
Like he was gonna run right past me. It happened so fast. But so all that is, it happened so quickly that I didn't have time to look at him.
Yeah.
I was just like, that's a big bull. Shoot him.
Yeah.
And then I shot him, and then I like rip another arrow out of the quiver, run up out of the riverbank and like get over it. There's kind of some mounds, and I like ran over and I like watched him tip over like 20 seconds after that, because I'm thinking I'm gonna have to like hit him again. Mm-hmm. And he was dying right there by the time I like got around the kind of like river mound and I could see him, and I was
just
like,
the best,
holy smokes, like what just happened.
Yeah.
And I just like laid there on the river just for a minute, like trying to do like a mental inventory of what just occurred. Mm-hmm. That was my first archery bull. I've been trying for 7 years to do that.
Oh, man.
And so I was like,
feels so good
drinking it in, man.
Yeah.
And it was like, I was just awash
yeah.
with the emotion of it. Laid there for a few minutes, and then got up and walked over to him. And I got to about like 30 yards from him, and I'm looking for the seventh, and I'm like,
what bull is that?
Wait a minute. That's not him. And I'd spent so much time looking at that 6x7 that my flinch reaction was like disappointment.
Mm.
And I stood there and I like walked up closer to him, and I could see this like a really good 6x6, but not the bull that I thought that he was. And then I can get like pretty emotional like in those moments, and I felt like that my initial reaction was disappointment, like really gutted me. Mm-hmm. Like I did not think that that was respectful of what I had just done. I felt really guilty. And so I set my bow down, I kneeled down beside him, I put my hand on his neck, and I just like took a moment and I was like, this is a good thing that just happened. Mm-hmm. And for me to feel disappointment is fine and understandable based on the story that I had been telling myself. I'd gotten attached to this one bull.
Sure.
And by the nature of the setup of the hunt, it was realistic for me to get attached to a specific bull.
Yep.
And then I was just like, thank you for your life. You are no less special than the bull that I intended to take. This is awesome. And I just like reprogrammed my thinking in like a 30-second window.
Mm-hmm.
I like killed that guilt and disappointment emotion. It's funny, like I was sitting there, just like propped my bow up and kind of faced back towards the river. It was like legal shooting light. I shot him like 2 minutes after legal light. Like it was very quick. And so the sun's like coming up, looking at the river. It was a scene, man. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's
and I like
in.
Hear a bugle like 1,000 yards away, and it's the bull that I meant to shoot with like 3 less cows. Huh. And so the bull that I shot had peeled off 3 cows, and he was pushing them up the other side.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of poetic, isn't it?
It was cool. It's like I love hunting because it's a game that you can never win.
Sure.
And it was like,
yeah,
next time.
Yeah. Yep.
Turns out, this is the cool part of the story. I had met a bunch of landowners around there, like when I was door knocking in the summer, and the nature of where I was hunting, there were guys that had access like up on the top that could see like all of my activity, but couldn't come down to where I was. And about a week later, I got a text message from one of the landowners. He was like, hey, I know that you were hunting that 6x7. I shot him. Like, I have pictures. Would you like to see him? Mm-hmm. And I was like, absolutely, I'd like to see him.
Yes, send them.
Dude's way bigger than I thought.
Really?
Yeah, he's huge.
Wow.
367. And
wow, giant.
Mass was like, big. I'll show you pictures later.
Yeah.
So my bull went 341.
That's a great bull.
Yeah, stud.
Yeah,
stud bull.
The other bull is 367. Super awesome story. Like, a hunt that you dream about in terms of like access and the kind of like the scenery on the river. It was so cool.
Mm-hmm. You were all solo?
Yep, by myself. Most of my hunting I do by myself. I'm not opposed to like hunting with other people. I do prefer, pending what the hunt is, I like to be by myself. Like the solitude that I was talking about.
Sure.
Just being quiet and being still and like having the freedom to make your own decisions. And mm-hmm. it's like, I love that. I love the like increased risk of hunting solo in mm-hmm. some spots. Like that's a very bear-y zone. Like they're definitely bears, you know. I don't know. It just kind of makes me feel more alive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Completely agree and understand that feeling for sure.
Yeah.
There's pros and cons to a lot of it, but yeah, it's solo. There's just something unique about it, right? Doing it on your own. It's just, it's making all your own decisions and just living within your own head day in, day out and trying to sort things out. And then, there's like a sense of satisfaction that really can't be matched by like pitting wits against an animal and doing it on your own. Mm-hmm. And then when it comes together, it's unmatched, that feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you get to like feel and see the entire experience on your own, you get to take it all in. It's kind of your own little thing. And I like that too.
Solo moments with an animal walking up the first time and like just, anyone there. Like I enjoy that part of it a lot.
It was your first bull with a bow? First elk? Had you missed other elk? It's curious.
I have missed one 3 years before. A big, big bull, like a 70 bull.
Oh, wow. This is so common. I don't know. I talked to very few bow hunters that were successful on their first animal. And I missed an elk. My first animal I ever shot at was a spike elk with a bow with my dad. My dad called it in to 23 yards. I was shooting my dad's first compound bow that he bought. Like, I decided to get into bow hunting and just thought, before I go all in, I'm just going to use his bow. So it was
You were how old when this happened?
I was 21.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, he called this bull, and I was shooting aluminum arrows. I was shooting a hodgepodge of broadheads. I was shooting an old sight that had three pins. They were brass, like with the little ball on the end.
Yeah, the cool ones.
And I practiced all. I bought a new release, so I did have that. And I think I bought a new rest for it because the one he had was just like a flipper, old style.
Mm-hmm.
And practiced all summer with that bow and bought a general season elk tag. And my dad went out with me. My dad used to bow hunt forever when I was a kid. But yeah, he called this lone spike into 23 yards, and he came in just charging. My dad was back maybe 80 yards, and he came around be like the left side of a big juniper, and I thought he was going to come around the right, so I was kind of focused on this little window to the, you know, the other side of this juniper, and he kind of came around this side, and I kind of pivoted, and when I pivoted, he stopped, and I was like, oh man, gig's up, and he kind of looked, but then he turned around, and he walked back around the tree, and came out completely broadside, like 23 yards, and I shot, and I thought I'd smoked him. I just thought it was over and done. I was so excited. My dad came up, and I said, yeah, I got him, and went up there. It's been interesting. Like, I have kids now of my own, and I think often I've thought about that moment specifically, like how my dad managed that moment, because the disappointment, because he found my arrow. Just covered in dirt, you know, no blood whatsoever, and, you know, how... like how tenderly, like he broke that to me, and I was devastated. Like, but it hooked me.
Yeah.
It really hooked me. You know, I think it's so rare when people actually have success on their first, and you learn a lot from that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when I was living in Seattle, that first elk hunt I did, in Idaho, I hunted with Derek Nelson from Matthews and David Frame, who's a photographer. And Derek and I were doing the coin flip for who's going to take stocks when. And we put a stock on like a 50s bull, like general unit. Like, we just found a great one.
Hang out with you more, it sounds like.
I don't know. But like, I'd never like put a stock on elk before. I didn't know what I was doing. It's like, took my boots off trying to be quiet. They were bedded. And we're slipping to the bedding area. This seems like a great idea.
Yeah.
It turns out when we watched him go up the hill in bed, he was so low. And then when I got in there to like 60 yards, the woods just erupted and cows came out of the woodwork, and he had picked up like a dozen cows more and just totally blew it. But I was so like, I mean, you know, like predator mode. Like, I watched him go bed in there by himself. I'm going to take 2 hours or however long, just like inches at a time. Mm-hmm. I'm going to see a tine. I'm going to figure out how to do this. And I'm going to, like, he's dead.
Yeah.
And I just got so educated on how not... easy it is.
Yeah.
And that was my first elk hunt. And then, I mean, I killed a bull with a rifle in 2020, which was my first season in Montana. And then after that, I hunted, you know, 40 days each season, like a couple seasons in a row.
Man.
Didn't kill one.
Mm-hmm.
Shot over the back of a big one in 2022. Downhill, side hill, like 65 yards, and the wind, like coming up the face, just held my arrow up. Like, it never, it just never sank. And I was just like, I watched it. It was perfectly broadside, like pushing cows up the hill. I mewed at him. He stopped. I was like, dead to rights. Let's go. Cut it loose. Great break on the shot. And the arrow just like straight. And it was like a foot over his back. Yeah. And I just like couldn't wrap my head around the physics of what had just happened. And then that's when I learned, like, oh, like side hill, downhill, uphill, thermal. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, dang.
And then 23, I shot a bull in a wallow.
Yeah.
And like, dude, like a movie, like head in the grass, like stomping around, shaking. Like, I got into 40 yards. Like, he has no idea that I'm there. This is going to be sick. And like, right as I cut it loose, he did like a big head shake and like moved a foot,
mm-hmm.
and he like turned right into it. And I just
right in the shoulder.
Oh, like,
that's the worst penetration.
He ran up the hill. I glassed him at, you know, 400 yards, and it's just like hanging out. And I watched him rake my arrow out on a tree.
Wow.
And then I got on him again later that day, no shot, and then saw him like pushing cows like across the fence the next day, like totally fine.
Yeah.
But yeah. I had like so many. I was inside 20 on like multiple bowls with no shots, like a couple of times. And it's just like the amount of effort that I put into that, like it just took way more than I thought. And I remember talking to guys like when I was first starting, like, you know, give me the tips. Like, what do I need to know? And they're like, you just need to mess it up a lot.
Yeah. Like figure it out.
Yeah. And that is so true.
So now that you killed that bowl going into next year, do you feel like your confidence is like in with all the lessons you learned? Do you feel differently about looking at next year?
I proved to myself that I can do
can
it,
do
which
it.
Counts for a lot, I think. I also know now, having done chased elk with a bow for 7 years, like how hard it is.
Yeah.
And so it's so circumstantial, yeah. Right? It's like, what specific animal are you hunting? What's the terrain like? How many animals are there? Like, do you have experience in the zone? It's like all the things. It is remarkably difficult.
So many things have to go perfectly right.
Yeah.
When you think about it.
So, and so like, yes, I'm more confident, but I also have no illusions about my own ability.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been thinking a lot about confidence lately, and just, I've been shooting a lot of target archery, I've been following Cole.
Yeah.
Colby.
Yeah.
Yeah. Been following along. Yeah, I saw Kirad the other day. If anybody wants to shoot a 30 game with him, let's do it. I was like, I want to do that.
Yeah, you should.
If we get him out to Vegas, maybe we'll do that.
He'll be there.
Oh, right on.
For the shoot.
Yeah, I'll be there too.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'll beat me pretty good. But yeah, I've just been thinking a lot about confidence. And it's like, in regards to hunting, I know that like if I look back, so like, I killed a really good bull the very next year after I missed that spike. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it was a perfect scenario. Hunted with my dad. And when that happened, it was like the impossible became possible. Mm-hmm. Like I realized this thing that is so hard that I'm trying to do, it's not totally impossible. Like it can happen, you know, if you're willing to just pour your heart into it. And I think over the years, it's become increasingly more so, like even when it is hard and I think this is never going to happen, I have that confidence in the back of my mind because I've done it. And I'm like, I know that only takes a moment. And it feels like it just, it's like a landslide. The more often you do it and that those little kernels of success you have, whether it works out or not, even if you get in tight and it just doesn't quite work out due to circumstantial, you know, issues, maybe the wind switches or maybe he just doesn't move the way he's supposed to. I know that I can do it. And it's like, it's just funny. The animals are funny that way. Cause like right now, when I go into the field with my bow on an elk hunt, if I got 10 days, I'm like, I'm going to kill an elk. I know I'm going to kill an elk. It's cause I know how to do it. Right.
Yeah.
But I feel differently about like mule deer, you know, mule deer, I've done it, but it's like, man, I don't quite have that same feeling of confidence that I have with elk.
So can we dig on this confidence thing? So
for sure.
This will make sense in a minute, but I want to probe at this. This is, and we'll, if I can do an UltraView thing here.
Yeah. Please.
So, tell me more about what confidence means to you while you're hunting.
What does it mean when I'm hunting? I think it's just this feeling that I've got that I know, like I guess I'm getting it twisted. Maybe confidence and just knowledge that I've gained. Like I know where to go. Like I know where a bull is most likely to be on any given time of the day. Like what's the best habitat? I guess I know enough about animal intuition and behavior that I have a good bead, a much better bead now at this point on where I'm likely. And then I think confidence in my actions, like that final 100 yards, I feel like I have a much better understanding of knowing when to cow call, not to cow call, when to bugle, not to bugle, when it's time to just shut up and run, when it's time to like go slow and sneak, you know, or how to approach the wind. And it's just a confidence. It's just like, I feel like my abilities, I've done it enough times now that like, I just trust my intuition and I go with it. Like that first thought, like, I think this is the right thing to do for this moment. Like I go with it and it increasingly works out over the years. You know, I don't know if that explains it, but that's kind of how it feels to me when I'm out there. It's interesting because people ask, I've had a lot of people ask, you know, like tips, tricks, how do you do it? Right. And you try to explain to somebody, why you do what you do, but it's really hard to capture because you can't, I can't put them in my mindset in the moment in each situation because they're all different, right? It's mm-hmm. really hard to like communicate that to someone. And I don't know, a lot of the things I feel like I do is just intuition. And I think it's built on confidence, like mm-hmm. in having observed it and seen it and done it and having a good understanding of the animal, and it just kind of works out.
Yeah.
But
what do you have thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think my terms of confidence in that situation is just ability to read the mountain. I feel like I can just really analyze everything. And it's like what Trail's kind of saying too about the intuition about where things might be or when they're, why they might be there. Like, I don't think a lot of times I'm really good at educating that. But like if I'm on the mountain, I know like, okay, I'm probably gonna find a mule deer right there. And if not, you know, I know to change my plan really quickly, move to a different area, glass from a different angle, and I'll probably find one here. And just like literally learning what I'm looking at on the mountain and adapting that situation to put the confidence in my favor, because I know I'm gonna find one eventually because of how I'm working and, you know, all the e-scouting and all the tools I have in front of me, all the glass and everything. And I will find one and I will kill it. And I go into every hunt thinking I'm gonna do that because the confidence is so high of everything I've done and ability to adapt on the mountain and, you know, adjust from different other hunters and learn how to deal with pressure and learn how to just never give up. And like the mental game, I think, is one of the biggest things I've ever mm-hmm. learned. Like everyone was asked, like, how do you go into these crazy hunts and then, you know, get animals? I think it's just, I'm just willing to stay out there when it's raining and be able to wear the glass all day, push through anything.
I mean, as you're talking, you're mentioning things like hunting pressure, right? I feel like I've experienced enough of it to know that like it's not the end.
No, just, I don't feel
discouraged. You see some other people, or you see some animals that are bumped. You have a buck that you're trying to kill, and he gets bumped. It's this confidence that I have. Like I think I can find that animal again. You know, it's I'm not going to give up because I've done it before. And yeah, same thing with just your ability to like stick it out, and even in moving, like your ability to be more adaptable. I'm like less intimidated than I once might have been by my ability to like survive on the mountain, go to an area, go further, you know, stay longer because I've done it. And I guess that's probably what I think of when it comes to confidence.
You're not
going to
get too stubborn. Like, I know this spot has to have an animal. Yeah. Like, no, like the other spot over here could totally have an animal. It might be even better than what I'm thinking right now. Leave it, go find other animals. And
I think you get, sometimes you get married to a unit or an area and you're like, this is all I really know, and this is really all I feel comfortable with. And if I push out into something else, it feels uncomfortable because I don't know what I'm going to find, you know, and I might waste days. And I think sometimes we talk ourselves out of it because we're uncomfortable with it. Mm-hmm. And I think the longer that I've done it, the more comfortable I've become, the more confident I've become with just being like, yeah, I'm going to do it.
And even when you fail things, it's like I missed a buck 1 year with my bow in a sweet little basin, and then I knew eventually I'm going to turn him up again and I'm going to kill him next time because I now know what I did wrong and be able to adapt from that. And yeah, 3 days later, found him again, first stalk after I missed him, went right in there and killed him at 30 yards. Like, to know I could do that because, all right, I already failed once. I'm confident now where he's going to be, what he's going to be doing. I know everything about him from all summer scouting. It's my target buck. Slipped in there, killed him. Mm. It's like, just, I don't know. It comes with experience, I think, a lot of it.
Yeah. So this is why I asked this. Just indulge me for a little bit here.
Yeah.
So in my new role at UV, running brand and marketing for us, trying to create like a compelling consumer-facing narrative is like most of what's in front of me for this year. And I've been circling the drain on this idea of like, what is our job as a company to offer our customer? Mm-hmm. And what does that enable them to do? And so I'll flesh this out live right now. This is not on the internet anywhere yet, but precision builds confidence mm-hmm. is the brand narrative that we're going to run with. And so for anybody that maybe isn't familiar with UV, Colby Hanley, our founder, started UltraView as a target archery company in his dorm room at Georgia Tech. I'm not a competitive archer. I have never shot a single competitive round in anything. I've probably shot less than 100 arrows at paper in my entire life. I'm a self-taught bow hunter with a lot of bad habits. I've never professed to be, quote, good at this, but I love it. Mm-hmm. It's funny, like the, I know you watched like the me and Crispy shoot off thing.
I love that.
Yeah, it's so like, great. I'm getting drug on the internet, mm-hmm. but like, I don't care.
Sure.
Like I'm willing to be bad in public in the pursuit of becoming better. Like that personally is just like a, core belief that I think is really important. But the precision builds confidence thing is, we start as a target archery company. That is a precision game where accuracy is the only thing that matters. So in 2016, when Colby's making Starlight, the first UV target scope that's integrated into the thing, so there's not wires and battery packs like hanging off of everywhere, that is a way to offer with a physical product, the shooter, more a precision instrument. Mm-hmm. Colby would tell you that we are a product design firm and a marketing company. And mm-hmm. so we build products and tell great stories. The thing where the exchange stops is, we can make great tools, and we do make great tools. But great tools will not make you a better hunter. You have to take your confidence with you, because mm-hmm. it's my opinion and my life as a hunter, that is the most important thing that you can take with you into the field, is being confident. It's mm-hmm. it's a mentality, it's a headspace, it's based on time in the game and your experience. And like, even what we were talking about before we started rolling, like, I would do the Audad hunt that I just did differently now that I've done a dozen stalks in the cliffs and like tried to get on top of an animal. Like, I was not confident because I had never done that before. Yeah. But now that I've done it, I have the ingredients to build that confidence. Yep. And so that precision builds confidence is a bridge for our company. That's like, we started in target archery. That's core to our DNA. We are continuing to build more products into the bow hunting side. And we will bring what we have the ability to bring on the precision instrument side into the bow hunting side. But it's on you to earn the confidence. Yep. I cannot sell you that. You cannot buy it. And so I want to flesh this out live, because I'm interested in what you guys think about this.
Are you doing market research right now?
Yes, I am, 100%.
Fair enough.
So I wrote this on the plane on the way out here. I fancy myself a little bit of a writer. So this is an ad in the Lancaster book. And so this is like the entire brand position. This is like something that I'm really interested in. So just indulge me for a minute. This version is probably too long. I probably need to cut 200 words out of this, but I want to know what you guys think. Bow hunting is hard. Anybody that says otherwise is a liar. At UltraView, we create and build gear that is capable of offering you, the archer, exacting accuracy downrange. That has always been our aim. Since our origin in Colby Hanley's dorm room, we have worked tirelessly to bring products to market that deserve to exist, solve our own problems, utilize smart design, and are fueled by a spirit of innovation. Precision is in our DNA. Our birthplace on the target line gives us a competitive advantage that others cannot claim. Scored games are core to our reason for being and heavily influence our conceptual thinking about why and how a thing should be made. In target archery, second place is just the first loser. There are no excuses, and while silver medals will undoubtedly be a part of your journey, they are not a thing that anyone displays with any real pride. The fun is in the winning, and we want to win. There is a beauty in this simplicity that does not transfer to the bow hunter. Hunting is an altogether different endeavor that requires a discipline all its own. When you take to wild places with an intent to kill, good gear will not save you. It can help you, absolutely, but it is completely on you, the hunter, to earn the right to be amidst the trees, atop the mountains, in the river bottoms, and across the plains, equipped with a lethality of mindset that cannot be bought. Confidence is yours to earn, and make no mistake, if you stand at full draw without it, you shame yourself and the animals which you pursue. Once you loose that arrow, you will never get it back. You will live forever with the proud memory or the dire consequences that such an action can bring to bear. That guilt is a weight that every bow hunter will carry at some point, but a burden that we wish upon no man. It is our job to offer you products that are capable of being deadly in their precision. It is your job to invest the time, the energy, and the effort required to cultivate the confidence to kill. There's a deep satisfaction that grows in the soul of a hunter upon retrieving an arrow like the one pictured here, the opposite pages of Bloody Arrow. Those memories hang on our walls, come to rest in our photo albums, and live on in family lore at Thanksgiving tables and around fire pits across the country. we want that for ourselves just as much as we want that for you. When you take our gear into the field, be it our sights, releases, or arrows, it is our sworn vow and promise to you, our customer, that we have done everything in our power to fulfill our side of the bargain. It is our solemn and hopeful plea that you uphold your side of the deal as well. Wherever it is that you roam, we join you in the sacred act that is hunting for wild game. Your trust in us is no small thing, and we thank you for it. Go forth with honor for the land, respect for wild places, and love for the creatures that call it home. We eagerly await your stories.
That's great. This is perfect, man.
So it's like the confidence aspect is like that. I really want to drive that home because I will tell you, like, having worked in this space for so long, like, selling gear is great. I love stuff. I'm a gear junkie. Like, I love all it. It's fantastic. But, like, that's not even close to the main thing.
Yeah.
Like, cultivating that innate confidence and ability to go with an intent to, there's an author that calls, like, loosing it. Punching a trigger, loosing an arrow, sending a bullet is like sending terrible magic to make food. And it's like that idea has just stuck in my head for years now. And I think it's the confidence that like that is what makes you a highly ethical and engaged sportsman.
Yeah.
Because you got to earn it.
Yeah, for sure.
Can't buy it. Got to earn it.
You wrote that on the way here?
Yeah,
on the plane. That's great, man. Thank you. Really like it. Thanks for sharing it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, I mean.
That was really good.
Do you actually like it?
Yeah, actually absolutely. Like it a lot. Yeah,
I loved it. Yeah, because I like the part. I mean, there was many parts of it. I like the, you know, sharing campfire stories and things, you know, around the Thanksgiving table. Yeah, and great gear is great. I love great gear. But it really is just the means to this bigger experience that I want, you know?
Yeah.
Listening to it, you can't help but want to be a part of that.
Sure.
Like I mean, you want that feeling, you want that emotion, you just want everything about that in a hunt.
Yeah. I mean, like, I pull no punches here. Like in the competitive landscape that is business within the hunt space, like I'm as competitive as anybody. Like I'd like to win and I want our stuff to be better. I want to have an audience that loves our mission and uses our products and believes that we're the best in the game. And like, I want to win. Way, way, way more important than that is, dude, I love what I call capital H hunting.
Sure.
Like I work in this space because I love hunting and because I think about hunting all the time. And if I had another job, I would be less effective at that job because I would be spending most of my time thinking about hunting. Mm-hmm. So like I have to work on hunting stuff. Mm-hmm. And for me, like the mission that is hunting and the reason that I really work in this industry is because I'm terrified that the lifestyle that I love could be legislated out of existence before I'm dead.
Right.
And so grabbing like a brand megaphone and just saying what I think, if I can find a company that aligns as closely as possible with what I think, and UltraView is that company for me right now, is like, I think that that's good for the culture of hunting.
Yeah.
And that's what I really care about. I think that competition in the marketplace is great because it pushes everybody to be better. And so people ask me like, well, what do you think about this company making that release or that side or whatever. And I'm like, it's great. I hope they sell a lot of them.
Yeah.
Because if they do and they beat us, that's fair.
Yeah.
Like that's what I'm after.
Right.
Now I'm confident that we're not going to lose. And I'd like to beat people just as much as I like to win. That's kind of a character flaw that I have, but like that ethos of, I just want hunting to continue to exist. I care about it. It means a lot to me personally. How I grew up, a lot of my friendships, it's how we like, it's the thing that we group text about. It's the stories that we tell. It's how we plan our vacations. It's how we spend our disposable income. It's like all of that. If hunting were to stop, dude, I'd be fucking devastated.
Yeah.
It's interesting too. The older I've gotten, I would agree with you. I would be devastated for myself. I would be devastated for everyone collectively. And I try to retain this mind frame. We get people talk at us and they say, you're putting more people in the field. You're getting more people interested in hunting. You're giving people tools that they can use to draw tags, and it's more people competing for a limited resource, right? You know, how can you do that? Don't you feel personally, you know, are you juxtaposed, right, to that, because you want it for you, right? Everybody kind of wants that for them, right?
Sure.
And I don't think that it came, I wasn't this way always, but the older I've gotten, I just keep reminding myself what hunting and those experiences have meant for me in my life. The value that I hold, like the genuine, like life defining moments that I've had through hunting, mm-hmm. I would be a real dick.
Yeah, if you didn't have
if
it.
I didn't want that for other people.
Yeah. Yeah,
you because people they have those same experiences.
Yeah.
You know, somebody that's never done it, I mean, it can change their life. It could hold the same places in their life that it holds in mine. And it would be really selfish and really dickish of me. Mm-hmm. To not want that for them also and everyone. And so yeah. That's how I feel about it. Like if I have to work harder, if I have to wait my turn, it's okay. I'm okay. I've become increasingly more okay with that because somebody's getting that tag. Somebody's having that experience. Somebody's life's being changed. Yeah. Somebody's developing memories. Somebody's taking their kid hunting. And I'm okay yeah. with that. And it's become more important to me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's the beautiful thing about hunting in this country is that resource, the wildlife's held in public trust. Mm-hmm. Everybody owns it.
Yep.
And like you can draw a tag and you can go out there and do it. And that the thing, like maybe we'll tie this back to the creative side of hunting and like why I care so much about that is really that whole conversation, our lifestyle continuing to exist is not contingent upon guys like us.
Yeah.
It's the non-hunting voting mm-hmm. public that yeah. You have to tell them a story that is like morally defensible, like ethically sound, ecologically based. And it's like, if you can present a reason for being, for hunting in a way that is not just palatable, but respectable, like that is getting wins and good PR for the way that we live. And I, on more than a couple occasions, like I don't, what I'm about to say, like, hear my heart in this. I don't think that I'm some champion of what we do here. I just like, I think there's a culture of hunting where we're, it's like, you're a hunter. So if you step out of line, I'll cover for you because we have to protect our own. I do not agree with that. Like, I think that if there are people doing damage to the thing that we love, we have to like police our own ranks. I really kicked the hornet's nest hard a couple of years ago in this state. There was a really big buck that got killed in a way that I didn't think was very ethical. And a photo went super viral. And I freaking rang the bell on that thing. And the niche hunting industry on the internet, like, laid into me real bad. And I was like, I do not care at all about you guys coming at me like this. Like, that photo does a supreme amount of damage to mm-hmm. what we're all trying to do out here. And that, like, be better than that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I already can envision the photo you're thinking of.
Yeah, it's in Utah. We don't yeah. need to give it more pub. But, like, I really care about doing this. I don't have kids yet. Mm-hmm. Like, God willing, I will have some. And, like, I want my kids and grandkids to be able to enjoy the thing that my grandfather taught me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's why I work in this space. That's why I care about it as much as I do. It's why it captivates most of my attention, and I give a lot of energy to it. Is because it's a thing to do that coordinates my steps and directs my life mm-hmm. That I find just like deeply satisfying. Mm-hmm. And so being willing to engage in difficult conversation at times, like with our own people, because that reflects to the larger culture. Mm-hmm. And it's really them that get to decide whether we get to continue to legally do what we love mm-hmm. to do. And so building a brand like UltraView, trying to present it in a way that's like most people, the lion's share, statistically, almost everyone will never be a bow hunter. But to the people that are, like, have a cause, champion something that is worth existing, like, make great product, build an audience that mm-hmm. loves what you love, like, have a tribe that rallies around a thing for a greater cause than just like selling widgets on the internet. Like that's great. I love business. Don't hear me wrong, but it's like, this is bigger than that.
Yeah.
And everybody is on the same team. But my opinion is that it's every teammate, like you hold your teammate to a high standard, because I think that it's worth doing, and damage comes quickly and progress is cultivated and it takes a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I just really believe in this idea. And so presenting that idea of confidence is like, if you've got hunters are going to, we're going to bumble around in the field. I'd certainly do.
For sure.
I'm always gonna, but if you can like progress along the trajectory that is your own as a hunter, cultivate that confidence, share it with other people, that becomes a narrative that I think is respectable by broader culture. That's real impact. That's what I'm most interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And you like, every commercial enterprise that's engaging in endeavors like that, like then you're actually having a conversation that's worth having, like on podcasts like this,
mm-hmm.
To where people will engage with it. And really just like a good result is just like, maybe that's not what I thought it was if I'm a non-hunting person. And like the way that these guys were talking about it, like I may never do that, but I have a little bit more understanding of it now.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's a good result. And you just need to be consistent with the application of things like that to protect the thing that we love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you like the theater? Do you ever go to the theater? Anything like that?
No. I mean, I like movies.
Have you been to like a professional theater, like a Broadway play?
Yeah, I've been to Broadway before.
So like, it might not be your thing. It's not really necessarily my thing, but when I've been to those, I can't help but sit and be at awe with the ability and the dedication at the craft that those people have developed. And I think about that same mindset. I would like to be the type of person, the type of hunter that even if somebody, it's not their thing, that they look at it, what I do, and think that guy's genuinely passionate and dedicated in a way that, you know, he's done his craft to the best of his ability. Right. And I think you can always appreciate that in somebody.
Good way to put it.
Yeah. I think about that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably a good place to stop. Maybe we've had you for an hour and 40 minutes.
Well, this is what I was saying at the beginning, though. How, like, I appreciate your mind and how you think and how you say things. Like, this last, like, 25-minute conversation right here was gold. The whole podcast was gold. I'm just saying the last, like, a little bit, when you're just, like, diving in, speaking, like, reading off what you wrote in the plane, like, A+. Like, that was a really good conversation.
Thank you, man.
Thanks for doing this. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity. I don't take it lightly. I'm always humbled to be able to do things like this. Mm-hmm. I love talking about this stuff, so thank you very much for having me.
Right on.